Once things got rolling, so many people started coming into the task force with so many wild proposals for screwing up the Red Army that Avrokotos had to assign 2 women case officers just to screen the ideas. They put together target studies and provided the Mujahideen with maps and operational intelligence for striking purposes. Providing the Mujahideen with real-time satellite intelligence had the potential to transform the Afghan soldiers' combat power. In time, Avrokotos won over another ethnic soul brother, Colonel Walter Jachko, who worked out of General Stilwell's Pentagon office, and who took it upon himself to task 80 of his people with producing target studies for the program. Jachko would make sure that satellites made extra runs over Afghanistan, and his technicians would translate the photographs into simple sketches to make them appear to have been drawn by the Afghans themselves. Close to half of the officers in the Afghan branch, including Avrokotos, were divorced. Everyone worked 6.5 days a week, 12 to 14 hours a day. After work, we only went out with agency people. We drank with them, slept with them. If you were lucky, you'd get laid 3 times a week, always with an agency person. And one Sunday a month, I'd head for Deal, Maryland, and eat crabs and smell salt water. Avrokotos has an intense love for most traditional American pastimes. He is, for an example, an ardent sports fan who gambles on professional football. Under the surface, however, few Americans were as tied to the superstitions of the old world as he was. One only had to look at his office walls to appreciate that this chief of the CIA's South Asia group was guided by his parents' Greek island mentality. The most distinctive object in his office was a phylacto, an intricate dark weaving laced with silver and gold threads that hung on his wall to protect him from evil spirits. Avrokotos's mother, Zafira, had stitched it for Gust when, at age 5, he was sick with jaundice, and the doctors had given him up for dead. In desperation, his father, Oscar, brought in an herbalist from the islands. She moved into the house, fed the small boy terrible-tasting mixtures of herbs, and rubbed a hideous black paste onto his gums. The old healer cured the boy, and when Gust came to say goodbye before going overseas with the agency on his first assignment, his mother took the phylacto off the wall and admonished him to always keep it with him. "You are going to all these foreign lands. I know how it feels," she said. "Take this with you. It helped me. It will help you." Throughout his travels, Avrokotos brought it along. He didn't talk about it to his colleagues, but he was every bit as superstitious as his mother. He remembered how feuds in Aliquippa would begin when someone approached a woman with a baby, saying, "May your child have a long and happy life." The mother, fearing that the speaker was pronouncing a curse in code, would be convinced that the person meant the opposite. Gust also remembered the interminable Greek Orthodox church services of his youth, when elders would walk the aisles slapping any young boy foolish enough to cross his legs. Crossing one's legs was considered bad luck. Drinking water out of a faucet also brought bad luck, according to Gust's mother. No matter where he was, Gust drank bottled water, just as he always closed his bedroom windows and shades at night, much to the annoyance of his wives. These were the ways of Lemnos, the island where Zafira had been born and raised. Next to the phylacto on Gust's office wall was a giant photograph of a Greek fishing boat, the Trident. The innocent-looking vessel was actually a high-speed armored ship used by the CIA in the 1950s to infiltrate agents into Albania. Gust had spent many a drunken evening aboard the Trident, entertaining Greek military officers and their lady friends, and the Trident had also cemented the bond between him and his son Gregory during their frequent weekend boat outings together. One of those trips had been particularly momentous. In early 1976, 5 weeks after CIA Station Chief Richard Welch had been assassinated and the 17 November terrorist group had marked all senior Athens station agents, Gust decided to take his wife and Gregory, then 10, out on the Trident to escape the tension. They went to a remote beach far from the capital. "It was a gorgeous morning," he remembers. "You could see for miles. It was one of the few moments I could relax and not carry a gun. All of a sudden, this gypsy woman was walking down the beach toward us. It was just weird. She was wearing 12 layers of clothes, a lot of white and purple and some red. The gypsy walked up to me and asked for a cigarette. She had a tiny, shriveled, weather-beaten face and a deep, resonant voice. 'Ah, American cigarettes. Obviously, you are American,' she said, not waiting for an answer. 'You have a blonde wife and a little boy with a bathing suit. Only Americans buy bathing suits. Also, you are Greek, but there are many Greeks who don't like you. There's a group that wants to kill you. They have already killed one of your co-workers. You have much to be afraid of." It was impossible for Gust to turn this woman away. Greeks have a great mistrust for gypsies, but inevitably seek them out for protection when someone has put the evil eye out on them. "Your name is Costa," she said. The statement surprised and frightened him. Costa was his Greek nickname. "Tell me more, old lady," he said. "I have to look at your hand, and I have to touch you. It's going to cost you lots of money. 1,000 drachmas, she told him. When Avrakatos began to protest, she brushed off her request. "The money isn't important. I like you." Then she proceeded to tell him about his family history. "Your father died at a very old age. He died a good death. Your mother died shortly after, of a horrible death." That unnerved Avrakatos because it was true. His father had recently died at age 89 of a heart attack. His mother had been killed in a gas explosion 3 weeks later. "This was something no one in Greece knew. I tried to find out how she did it," he said. "But she didn't know. That a flash came over her and she could see it. If she was a flimflam artist, she was damn good." As the morning drew out, Gust shared his wine and cheese picnic lunch with the old woman, who offered to make him a philacto. "I know you believe, even if your wife doesn't. As long as you carry this, you won't have to worry that someone will hurt you or take your money. But as to health, only God can protect you." Gust agreed. 2 out of 3 isn't so bad," he said, whereupon she brought out grotesque things from under her clothes, including dried animal parts and bits of bats. When he asked what they were for, she replied, "You don't want to know." She put together the philacto, then wrapped it carefully in waxed paper and said, "Put it in a safe pouch. Don't ever throw it away, because you'll be throwing luck away." To this day, Avrakatos never moves without this black, shiny composite of bat wing, unknown animal parts, and whatever other ingredients gypsies employ to protect their charges. All of these superstitions help explain what led Gust to embrace Charlie Wilson in the summer of 1984, when everyone else at the CIA was trying to stiff-arm him. Avrakatos could see that something was protecting this congressman from the fate of mere mortals. Every charge in the book had been leveled against him, and yet he had shed them all and given what amounts to the evil eye to General Stilwell, Chuck Cogan, the State Department, and the entire 7th floor of Langley. But more than his apparent power to ward off enemies, what pulled Avrakatos to Wilson was the thing that all Greeks are looking for. Wilson was the man with good luck. Greeks are gamblers at heart. They look for signs. They bet with winners. And to Gust, Charlie Wilson was the quintessential man with whom to place a bet. He was the ultimate amulet, the good luck charm. This, then, was the man in overall command of the largest CIA operation in history, Gust Lascaris Avrakatos, age 47, a CIA super grade, making $59,000 a year, with 22 years invested in his pension plan, a philacto on the wall, another in his pocket, and an outlaw congressman he counted on for the ride to victory. The only ones more irrationally optimistic than Wilson, Avrakatos, and his Dirty Dozen were the Mujahideen, who were being slaughtered that year in record numbers. To them, it was all so obvious. There was only one superpower, and since he was with them, they could not lose. Allah would choose the instruments of their salvation. In the end, however, it would not be some piece of hocus-pocus or anything mystical that would give Gust and Charlie and the United States the capacity to ride the Mujahideen's guerrilla war to victory. The true transformational element arrived at Langley that fall in the form of an unassuming young man who had only been in the CIA a year and a half. He was without superstition, entirely rational, and no one looking at him could ever have imagined that within a matter of weeks he would completely redesign and transform the nature of the CIA's Afghan program. Looking back at it years later, Avrakatos would see the arrival of Mike Vickers into the ranks of the task force as part of a peculiar destiny that seemed to be guiding this drama. This story is continued on Disc 2.